A very good afternoon to our listeners. Welcome to our program, Root Out Corruption from Namibia. I am Lucas Kalwapa Katenda, prepared to have conversation with you about corruption in Namibia and how best we can work together as a nation, as individuals, to fight it, to prevent it, to punish it, and to root it out completely from the face of Namibia. I have a special visitor today in the program, Mr. Dennis Thaire, who is a program manager at the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung, because this our program is brought to you, obviously, by Eagle FM, sponsored by Konrad Adenauer Stiftung, and I am simply a presenter for it. And since we started just a week ago, we would like to have a voice from our sponsor, and I will give him a chance some time later, not now. Now, in the meantime, I would like to address today's question, starting with the conditions on which corruption flourish. What are those conditions that help corruption to germinate, to flourish, to grow, to be celebrated, to become a sort of a culture? And again, as I've mentioned, I will be using a number of resources, especially those from the United Nations, especially Convention on Corruption, and also the toolkit that was developed to help party states, in other words, countries that have ratified the UN Convention on Corruption, develop strategies to prevent as well as to deal with cases of corruption, suspected or real ones. Now I would like to start with the conditions that facilitate corruption. Corruption doesn't just happen out of the blue. There should be some conditions. And here it says, without proper vigilance and effective countermeasures, corruption can occur anywhere. Without vigilance and effective countermeasures, individuals, heads of institutions, heads of government offices have an obligation to be vigilant. And how can you be vigilant? I keep on repeating myself that by promoting good governance measures. Without good governance culture and policies and guidelines and standards and rules that should be adhered to, it means we are allowing corruption to grow and to flourish and to become part of our governance culture. So we have to be vigilant in terms of passing laws, in terms of adhering to the rules and to the standards, and to make sure that no inch of what appears to be corrupt has an opportunity to rear its ugly head. Not only to be vigilant, but also to have effective countermeasures. Okay, those are now the rules, as I've mentioned, reporting system, anti-corruption agencies, and all people to be sensitized through public education, as we are doing, and possibly to use our education system as a way to instill a sense of responsibility and the principle of responsible citizenship in our children while they are young. And I will pose a question to Mr. Dennis Daire on that one when the time comes. So if we are not vigilant enough, and if we are not using effective countermeasures, corruption can occur. It can happen anywhere. It can happen at home. It can happen at school. It can happen at hospital. It can happen at any government, major government office, public business, anywhere in traditional authorities, in churches. If we are not very careful, corruption can happen anywhere. And what is corruption again? I said it's a process in which a person benefits on the expense of the majority. Maybe a sense of importance, I must benefit, I must receive the first honor, things like that. And these things can happen anywhere. Now, World Bank and the United Nations and other multilateral and bilateral organizations have shown that any society or organization is susceptible, even where well-established checks and balances are in place. It is a disease. It is a virus. Corruption is like, what are the diseases we have here that are always available? Maybe HIV and AIDS, let me say that, or TB. It's always endemic. It's always as a way of showing up. Even if you are well established, you have good policies that will prevent or that will make corruption exposable, immediately it shows itself up. There is always a way to maneuver and to manipulate systems, even governance systems. And therefore, there must be stiff vigilance and stiff, effective countermeasures. And these are the things we are missing in our societies. You hear this person has done that, you hear this. And even the cases that are going on at the moment, it is clear the checks and balances, even some good rules are there, but for as long as they are manipulatable, they can be manipulated, corruption can take place. It is an endemic. I hope you understand, listeners, when I say endemic. When we say pandemic, it means it affects all people. When we say epidemic, we say it affects many people in a particular region. When we say it's an endemic, it is forever there. It doesn't want to disappear. It will show up in one way or another. When you sit relaxed thinking that corruption is gone, only to hear after some few months or after 2 years, another case. It's always there. And if I were in church, I would say the heart of men of wanting more. The heart of men. We always want more. We want to be better. We want to be treated better than this. This whole idea of wanting more and wanting more and wanting more will make you manipulate the systems. And by so doing, manipulating the systems, you are inviting yourself to become one of the corrupt people. Not only that, in number two, combating corruption, building integrity, and establishing credibility requires time, determination, and consistency. I am a strong believer in the meanings of the words. And if you want to be a good learner as well, please make sure you understand each and every word. Here we are saying combating corruption. In other words, preventing it, punishing it, rooting it out, making sure it doesn't happen. And when it happens, it is immediately exposed and immediately dealt with. Okay? Building integrity. It is not just a question of combating. Our people need to be people of integrity. That is why even when we come to political issues, and remember, corruption is a friend of politics. And the politicians have to be extra careful when they are involving themselves in transactions and in procurements. They are very good friends. When we need politicians, when we need leaders, we need people of integrity. And integrity is built. Okay? People of integrity, but we have to build integrity in the people. And that is why sometimes when you hear people reducing the conversation of who should be the regional councillor, who should be the village headman, who should be the governor, who should be the minister of this, who should be the president, who should be the chief, who should be what? It is no longer a question of mere I was born there. Countries have passed that stage. I come from the royal family. Therefore, I should inherit from my father or from my mother. Leadership is no longer about I was born into the system. Leadership is about the integrity of the candidate, especially in protecting the society against the evils, not only economic, economic evil, not only poverty, not only unemployment, but even from theft, especially in the organized crime that comes in a form of corruption. And therefore, when people reduce conversation into I was born there, I was in exile, I was dead, and so forth, people like myself, I just lose interest. Because I am interested to know who is the person with necessary knowledge, with necessary skills, with credibility, with determination and consistency to promote good governance, to promote socio-economic well-being of the people by combating things like corruption. Head on. This is the person I would want to hear taking over the reins of whatever. It could be a traditional authority, it could be a church, it could be a community organization, it could be a regional council, it could be a ministry, it could be the state itself. So it is not just building integrity, it is also the question of credibility. When we say credible, I don't jump the words. All the words must be properly understood in their original meaning. Credibility. Somebody must be credible enough. An institution must be credible enough. So for people to say, well, this is a credible person. This is a person to rely on. This is a person to be trusted. This is a person one can speak to. But people with double faces and double dealings and secrecy, too much secrecy, even when it comes to public affairs, somebody has to be scared for people such as those to take reins of our affairs. And not only do we need credibility, we also need determination. Determination to do what? Determination to make sure we promote only nothing but good governance. We must be coming to work on time. We must be doing performance management or assessment. People should be accountable. People should be transparent. All these principles that you may know of governance and administration to be rigorously followed, because it's the only way you can prevent corruption from happening and spotting it when it has happened and expose it and even deal with it in terms of discipline, especially in punishing it. And there must be consistency. All these things cannot happen in the air. They should be done by a person. That's why I'm talking about those in leadership of any institution. There must be consistency. You don't say this today and you say the other tomorrow. Or you say this today and you do different. Your word must be equivalent to your bond, as they say. So in many ways, combating corruption, building integrity, establishing credibility, the trouble is it requires time and it requires determination and it requires consistency. You must be willing to do it. You must be consistent. You must be determined. You must be courageous. You must be steadfast. This is what I'm going to do. And in many countries, I have mentioned, people are serious with corruption. And you see it. Those of us who have done with international organizations, those who support or donate some funds here. Some people are tired of, I have to sign this, I have to do this. This is the only way you can protect each other in terms of dealing with procurement, in terms of dealing with funds disbursement. Somebody must check the first thing. There must be a requisition. It must be checked by somebody. Another person must approve it. Another person. So that there's a chain, that there is no way one person can have a discretion. And therefore, remember, there is what we call abuse of discretion. So there must be always checks and balance when it comes to our offices. So it requires time. We must have time really for these things. It's not a lip service. We must not pay lip service to them. Then the second sentence goes on like this. When anti-corruption strategies are first instituted, a long-term process begins during which corrupt values and practices are gradually identified and eliminated. Can you see? When there is a strategy to fight corruption, first of all, there must be a long-term process to deal with those corrupt values. Corrupt values are like what? It's dishonesty. In my class at the university, when I teach about RME, guidance and counseling, I keep on addressing issues like this. And I say to my students, we were brought up in a way that we should lie. In some cases, not in all, but in some cases, we are told to lie. We are not told to be honest. I remember as a young boy growing up, our parents tell us, or older siblings tell us, when somebody asks you what you have eaten last night, tell them we have eaten this, even if that is not what we have eaten. You see, it's a way of teaching a young person, don't expose your internal affairs to somebody outside, which is very good. But we shouldn't be told to lie. We should be told to tell them the truth that, hey, as a child, I am not responsible to share information about what we have eaten with people from outside. We should be taught like that. If you really want to know what we have eaten last night, please go to my parents. They will tell you. So this is how we should. But we are told now, tell them, don't tell them. And those simple lies have created in some of our people a habit of lying all over. In terms of dating a girl, they are lying. They want to marry, they are lying. Everything is about dishonesty. So in many ways, we need to eliminate all these corrupt values of lying, of even a small lie, of saying, well, I didn't come to work on time because I went somewhere. Even though you were just sleeping, you didn't go somewhere, you were just sleeping, or you were drunk last night. We have turned the small lies, but they will always turn into big lies, and they will corrupt, really, even the process. So those corrupt values and the corrupt practices must be gradually identified, and not only identified, they must be completely eliminated. And how do we do this? It's when we institute public education, and we must start with our children. Because older people, some may have some amendment of their lives and alterations here and there, but it is good to start when kids are smaller, at home and in schools and in religious institutions, in churches, in mosques, and wherever. And in most cases, a complex process of interrelated element is involved. Reforms to individual institutions, they must be reformed. I heard somebody saying, hey, you are now a bishop of a reformed church. We need to reform everything. So reformation is necessary, because without reformation, my friend, it's like you are not updating your computer. There is always new information, new updates need to come to us, and we reform our individual institutions and even our own individual understandings and conceptual framework. We need to change it. We need to amend. We need to alter what we used to do and what we thought it was. But we must update ourselves and say, it's no longer like this. It is now like this. So reform to individuals, then institutions, take place in stages as problems are identified, countermeasures are developed and implemented, and personnel are reoriented and retained. Can you see the word re? Yeah? And that is what it means by the word reformation. So you need to reform individual institutions by identifying the gaps within the institution, and then you develop countermeasures, and then you retrain and you reorient and you even retain the staff, because they are the people who know how things work within your institution. And often the progress at one stage or in one area cannot be achieved until other elements of the strategy have come into effect. Generally speaking, training personnel, or to take place the long-term interest of integrity before the more immediate benefits of corruption, is a longer, more gradual process than a direct measure such as criminal prosecutions or specific administrative reforms. So similarly, the establishment of a popular expectation that favors integrity over corruption furthers credibility for the reforms and inspires public confidence in the integrity, and the reformed institutions will always lag behind actual progress. It gives us an idea in our minds that in order to fight corruption, you have to change the environment where corruption exists, or where corruption is likely to exist. You have to change. You have to understand the concept. You have to understand the environment and change everything. Change it for the betterment of the institution, in a way that corruption will be either prevented or will be spotted immediately. It is seen, it is dealt with accordingly, and so doing, the next person may not want to commit the very same act, because they know somebody somewhere is going to take note of it. So systems with excessive individual discretions, overly complex rules on discretionary powers, as well as systems lacking structures to effectively monitor the exercise of discretion and hold decision makers accountable, tend to be more susceptible to corruption than those that do not. I used to hear, I am speaking under correction, and when I'm saying this, I am only saying this according to what I am hearing. I'm not passing any judgment. I used to hear when people are applying for fishing rights, that the process is so skewed. And you never know who is responsible for what. Who is going to scrutinize this? How is the process? It seems to be too long, and people have to wait and to wait and to wait and to wait to know whether they are successful or not. And what is the major suspected corruption case today in Namibia? It's from the fishing sector. So be very careful there. Excessive individual discretion or overly complex rules. You have to put this, you have to write this, you have to put this. Even a person who doesn't know how to write or write professionally will find it very hard. You may end up preventing some people from completing those forms or whatever they are, and you are favoring those that are close to knowing or have known the process, and therefore you may end up granting the rights to people whom you know or whom you have trained or whom you have helped somewhere somehow to know the process. So it is, we have to be careful there. How do you put up the rules? The rules must not be complex in a way that it will be difficult for people to understand, let alone to action, but they must be simple in terms of their applicability and their practicality. Because at the end of the day, somebody need to sign something. It's like the parliament. The parliament have to pass laws, and the national council, and then, well, both of houses now of parliament, the national assembly, the national council, but the head of state will still have to sign. At the end of the day, we will say, well, the president has signed. It's no longer really the National Assembly. It is now the president's duty, and we will blame him if he has signed something which is not very good. And therefore, this whole process of many people involved in the process need to be properly monitored in a way that there is no manipulation so that corruption can take place. Then systems in which individual offices or departments or agencies operate in isolation from one another tend to be more susceptible to corruption again. One reason may be that systems where individual elements operate in coordinated fashion and communicate regularly with each other tend to carry out mutual monitoring and both of activities and individuals. My friends, I don't need to repeat the principles of good governance. Basic administrative skills, basic management skills, monitoring and evaluation. Simple. You may use millions of words to tell us about these rules, this what. At the end of the day, somebody must monitor what is happening, and somebody must be able to evaluate from A to B what have we done. How have we done it? How have we reached a consensus on this? How have we concluded on this matter? That's what we call monitoring and evaluation. But when the office is separated from others, somebody's likely going to do some funny things there because there's nobody who is monitoring, and it's highly likely that even the evaluation will happen, but it will be superficial, and it is not going to be an in-depth in a way that a corrupt activity and element or corrupt values can be spotted and that they can be eliminated. So, we are now 5 minutes after the hour of 15, and we have spoken about the conditions under which corruption can flourish. When you have, as I have mentioned, separate offices, separate departments, excessive discretion, when there is no, when there is no what we call building of characters of the people, integrity, for instance, transparencies, and all these things, if they are not there, and if there are complex rules, if there are no vigilance, there is no countermeasures, when people are really sleeping on the job, you are allowing corruption to flourish there. But there are conditions that are required to prevent corruption. But in the meantime, I would like to open the air to the listeners. But before I do that, I would like you to listen to the program manager from the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung to help us also understand why is Konrad Adenauer Stiftung concerned about good governance, democracy, civil participation, the plight of women and the young people, most particularly. Why is this, Dennis?
Thank you, Reverend, for the opportunity, and thank you for welcoming me to the program. The items that you have actually mentioned on top, those are the core values of the foundation. Those are the basis on which it operates. It looks at strengthening democracy, the rule of law, human rights, and so on. So those are the core values upon which the foundation is founded, and which actually guides the foundation in its daily work. And also to add to that is, I think as an institution, we also have to have focus on a number of areas that could actually guide our activities. And the items you have mentioned are the key bullet points, but under them, there are also other activities and projects that are implemented countrywide in Namibia and in Angola.
Thank you. Thank you very much for giving us that background of the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung or Konrad Adenauer Foundation. I would like now, as we were just chatting before we started the program, how do we root the understanding of corruption within the nation? And to mention something about education and children, the curriculum that we have at the moment, whether it is really focusing on the future. What are your views on what can we do as a nation, especially in empowering the young ones?
I think it's a very good question, and it's a very good subject that we're discussing today. I think one important aspect is to have corruption actually as part of the school curriculum, because the education is one tool or one method or one measure that we can actually use to get the people to understand from a very young age what is corruption, how do you identify it, what constitutes corruption, how do you distinguish a corrupt act from a non-corrupt act. And then after that, probably one could also emphasize the importance of civic education. What is my responsibility as a citizen? How do I contribute to a coherent society? How do, and what am I expected to do? What action should I do or take? What action am I not supposed to take? And this is actually good awareness, because once the people understand that from a very young age, they will be able to, number one, identify the act, distinguish the act, the corrupt act, from a non-corrupt act, and also take responsibility in terms of reporting or highlighting the corrupt act to the relevant institution. And therefore, it's an important process. And then after that, also, once the act is reported to the institution, they will be able to understand and to expect an action to be taken by the institution. Because in the absence of an action being taken, it kind of discourages them from actually reporting such action in future. But also what is important, there is, apart from the, you mentioned a number of items like integrity, credibility, determination, and constituency. And there is also one element that I think is critically important that I want to add, and that is an element of equity and fairness. Because once an action is taken by an institution, it's important that the act is actually fair. So in other words, once the people have reported corruption, or the children understand that we are going to report corruption, they need to see an action being taken by the institution responsible institution, and that action that is being taken, it's important that an element of equity or fairness is embedded within that action. In other words, it shouldn't matter about an individual that has committed an act. What should actually be the primary focus should be the act itself.
At a different platform, before I leave you, I mentioned about political instability in developing countries. And in one of my introductory remarks a week ago, I mentioned that corruption appears to flourish in some countries, and it struggles to even show up in others. And where it shows up, it's likely going to cause chaos. And I remember here mentioning that even the charlatans will stand up and say, hey, there is a corruption there. So how do we promote, especially from African point of view, without fear or favor, how can Africa come of age to be a stable continent where there should be no coups? I just read four days ago, there was a coup in Burkina Faso again. So how can Africa raise above these corrupt activities in order to promote stability, economic growth, and social cohesion?
It's a very good question that is actually go to the core of the issue that we're discussing today. Broadly, one of the key problems that we have in Africa is corruption, and linked to corruption is governance. Because the problem of the two subjects, they actually, corruption, what it does, it takes away from the public. It actually breeds poverty, it affects growth, and once those two elements are actually affected, the impact on the people and the society is actually wider. So I think what we need to do in Africa is actually to address issues of governance and build confidence within our institutions. And I think if you ask me to name one important aspect that we need to do, I think we need to build strong institutions, because once you have got strong institutions, they can actually address some of these issues, because people can come and go, but the institutions can always remain. So in other words, if you set up an anti-corruption agency, you need to make sure that the agency is properly and adequately resourced in terms of human resources and in terms of financial resources, so that the institution has an ability to take the necessary action to actually address the problem. So I think once you move away from addressing issues of governance and corruption, then you can go on to the next level. So I think we need to open up these issues and also discuss and actually debate them openly in society. And I think there is also one important element that is linked to that. It's how we elect our leaders in Africa, and what kind of leaders do we elect in Africa? What do they bring on the table? What kind of integrities do they have? So it's actually a broader subject, but actually to summarize it, I think I could actually mention those few points.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dennis Daire, for your input and for your presence today in the studio, so that you can also know what happens behind the mic and also hear from the public. I now open the line for the public to call in. Some were already trying to call here. As our program manager was speaking, but please now you can come in studio. The number is well known, and I will give you the floor to address us. Please make your point very short and give chance to others. I would like to invite our first caller. Welcome to Eagle FM. Thank you.
So, thank you, Bishop.
Yes.
Good for coming, make us awareness about corruption and media. Because one can say, in this land of the grave, corruption is pandemic. You know, we are having so many examples that are done by our politicians. For instance, we had the case of Onipa Town Council, where swap local councillors what they did is just a corruption. And a day before yesterday, we are also hearing what is happening in Okahandja, which means there are some people, most, or if not most, many of our politicians are believing that without making corruption, we cannot live in peace and harmony in this country. That's why it's very, very important to make each and everybody awareness about how to combat this corruption in this country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Your point is taken care of. Institution, Mr. Dennis just spoke to strengthen our institutions. We need strong institutions in terms of administrative and in terms of management. Whether it is a local authority, whether it is a ministerial office, whether it is a department, whether it is a branch, whether it is a section, there must be a strong preventive measure, reporting measure, disciplinary measure, in a way that nobody will try even an inch of a corrupt activity. We need strong institutions, and I hope those who are in charge of our legal formulations, especially the lawmakers, the police makers, those who set rules and standards, can hear us and can hear you as members of the public, that we need strong institutions to prevent corrupt activities from happening. Eagle FM, you are welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
Very good afternoon.
Talking of strong institutions, I also think that we must add that strong and independent institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Preventative institutions. Look, if you look, for example, at the Office of the Auditor General, you look at the Office of the Anti-Corruption, you look at the various parliamentary committees in this country, they seem to be toothless. The Auditor General will go out into public offices, especially your local authorities. They will find what they find, but they will have no authority to do anything. You see, now the parliamentary committees will go around, they will find irregularities of laws and procedures in various state institutions. But yet they have no teeth to propose or to prosecute or to do anything or to charge the those that are suspected of having, you know, misappropriated or done anything wrong in this institution. So the law must be overhauled. That's why when you look at our political setup, the political parties and their campaigns, I would want to follow a party that would suggest the relook of our laws and the constitution as to give authority and independence of state institutions that must guard our resources, our public purse.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's no use to have all these all these institutions, all these bodies giving us reports, and these reports are so tormenting because they tell you all these other things, but they are not telling you what is going to be done to recoup the resources that were wasted or stolen or whatsoever. This is my feeling.
Mm-hmm. Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much. I like the statement there. Dennis, may you say something about independence? Because I remember in the previous shows that we had in the Oshwambo, the question of independence kept coming up. An independent institution, the ombudsman, how independent it is. The Anti-Corruption Commission, how independent it is. Auditor General, how independent are they? How do we facilitate a process that they are still state institutions? They are also accountable to somebody. They must be paid. They must have a budget to carry out their activities. Obviously, the state must do that. But how do I identify an independent person, that this person is really independent? Because we don't see the heart of man, you see. How do we promote that? It's a hot issue. in our program all the time.
I think before coming to that question also, I think it's important that just to build upon the subject contribution of the previous caller, it's important that apart from having strong institutions and independent institutions, once, for instance, these committees go out or once these Chapter 9 institutions actually gather this information, there need to be connectedness between the different institutions.
Yeah.
You gather your report, you write your report, and then you forward it to the relevant institution. I don't think it serves any purpose. You compile a report and then you just leave it in your office and you gather dust. I think it needs to be forwarded to the right institution. So here there is an argument of implementation. How do we ensure that implementation actually takes place and that action actually follows thereafter? I think coming back to your question, I don't want to say much about it, but I think what is important, it borders on the question of the separation of power within our system. Because, for instance, at the moment, in terms of construction of our system and the law, you have, for instance, the Anti-Corruption Commission that reports to the office of the Prime Minister. So that means the Anti-Corruption at the moment report to the executive. Ideally, the Anti-Corruption Commission should be reporting to Parliament, which is a different arm of the state. So I think there you can have more outcome, because then you have more debate, you have more openness and so on. So how we have actually designed and structured our system in terms of checks and balances, perhaps is what we need to have a relook at in terms of making sure that in order for this Chapter 9 institution to actually give us a better outcome, how should the reporting processes be? How can we get the better implementation of the outcome of the reports and actions they have actually taken to make sure that there are consequences at the end of the day?
Welcome, caller, to the program.
Yes, good afternoon.
Very good afternoon to you. Please, A of you.
Yes. For me, I want to go on the independence of government's oversight institution.
Yes, please.
Yeah, for me, how can institutions be, overseeing institutions be independent? Because who appoints the head of those institutions?
Yeah.
Who's the appointing authority?
Yes.
Yes, that's where the problem is. Because I reckon all the appointing authority of all these institutions is the head of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So now, how can you really beat at the hands that is feeding you? For me, that's where the problem lies. The problem lies with the appointing authority.
Yes, thank you.
If there could be an independent, if the head of those institutions could be appointed by independently without the interference or without the state involvement.
Yes.
I think they will do their oversight duties.
Yeah.
But as long as they are being appointed by the head of the state, I don't see any independence, not at all.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That question of independence, it kept coming and it will still dominate even this current show, edition of our Fighting Corruption, Root Out Corruption Namibia. But remember I said slots that I have spoken, I mentioned that we have what we call Parliament. And if you look at our constitution, you have the executive, you have the legislative, you have parliament. These bodies are very, very important. But take note, parliament is more important than all of them. Because it is parliament who holds the head of state accountable. The question is our composition of parliament. Whether our parliament is composed first of people of quality and caliber to fight and give direction as to how this country must be managed, how this country must be governed, how this country must be administered. We need people with caliber, with knowledge, with experience, with skills, with understanding. And we need also the variety. We don't need just one group. We need the variety so that parliament is full of people and they don't have to caucus before they come to an agreement. It must be real debate, and it must be real issues. Not to say if we have to vote against this, I will also vote in favor because people will see me anyway. It must be people of caliber. But that's a different topic because parliament is composed by people who are elected. And it is election time. It is now, the ball is now in your hands as the community to vote for the people and make sure not only the head of state, but also the people of caliber in parliament, and also the mix. There must be representative from all kinds of regions and all from kinds of all people represented, so that you can hold executive accountable. Welcome to the program, Eagle FM.
Yes, Tate Katenda.
Yes, please go ahead. You are in air.
Yeah, just to tell the our guest in the studio to speak up a little bit because we can hardly hear him.
Okay.
Yeah, your voice is clear, but his voice is a little bit lower.
Okay.
Good, Tate.
Thank you very much, Dennis. We will. Yeah, do you want to say something about further about interconnectedness? I was talking about monitoring and evaluation. Who is responsible after who? Auditor General finds something. Can he take it to Ombudsman or to Prosecutor General or to Anti-Corruption Commission? So how do the gaps there should be addressed, isn't it?
Definitely. I think the gaps need to be addressed. But related to that also, I think society, there is a need to actually create awareness of the responsibilities of the different institutions. Let's say, for instance, you have got the Ombudsman, you have got the Anti-Corruption Commission, you have got the Auditors General. They all have separate responsibility, but that is so critical in terms of checks and balances. Let's take, for instance, you've got the Auditor General compile the report to Parliament, and then what happened after? It gets channeled in the system. But what is important is that we need to follow up on the actions. You follow up and see what has been done. The report has been done. It has compiled. It has been forwarded to the right institution. Thereafter, what action has actually been done? And then after, it's important also to take feedback to the people. The people need to understand that in terms of the Parliament Committee, for instance, that was here. This is the information they gathered, and this is the feedback in terms of the action that has been taken or that will be taken in future. But also what is important, I think, which actually contribute to some of the problem that we face, we have got these institutions, but the people hardly know what the institutions are actually doing or what their constitutional mandates are. So this is actually a call for some of the institutions to actually do more public awareness in terms of sharing with the public the kind of work they do in simplified manner. Let's say, for instance, you have got the Anti-Corruption Commission. How many people in public actually know what the Anti-Corruption Commission strategy actually entails? What does it say? From when to when is it going to apply? How does the strategy actually speak to the rights of the people in terms of the people raising issues with the institutions? So I think there is a lot of work that needs to be done. Of course, it's a cumbersome process, but I think it also goes back and speak to the institution and themselves in terms of how much public outreach do they do, and in terms of if they do enough public outreach, what kind of feedback do they get from the public, and what responses do they get, and how much awareness are the public aware with in terms of the constitutional mandates of these institutions?
Thank you very much, and we are close a few minutes because we started some 5 minutes into our program, into our time. We have maybe 3-4 minutes. Thank you very much, Dennis, for raising those, because it is part of the United Nations office. And if I just read number 6 there, systems in which individual offices, departments, or agents operate in isolation from one another tend to be more corruption. Those are now offices. But if there is a connection, okay, One reason may be that systems where individual elements operate in a coordinated fashion, if people can know what is happening, somebody must know what you are doing in the public office. The public office is not a private office. That's why it is called public. It is not your home. It is not your bedroom. It is a public office. It is always possible for somebody to know what you are doing. I know there are security issues, but those are catered in a different legal framework. Here we are talking about a public office, just a nurse, just a control officer, just a payroll officer. Somebody somewhere must know what you are doing. If everything you do is secret, you are likely going to participate or to breed corrupt activities. And that's why it is necessary, and I agree with you, Dennis, when you mention about coordinating the offices that are responsible for fighting corruption or for fighting maladministration or mismanagement, like now the Ombudsman, like now the Office of the Prosecutor General, like now the Auditor General, like now the Anti-Corruption Commission, and even the law enforcement agencies, and even the judiciary itself. There must be a way to coordinate. But at the end of the day, whether the parliament has found something wrong in which office, Auditor General's office found something wrong in another person's office or whatever, those reports must come to parliament, obviously, but parliament must promulgate something. They must pass a particular stiff, maybe a guide or a standard or a rule that must make sure that the problems identified are dealt with by the relevant authority. And you have all these offices that ombudsman, this is what you have captured. Prosecutor General, this is what comes up in the report. We need to see action taken to determine whether there was a mistake here or it was a mere oversight or whatever it is. So if it was a mistake, somebody must be brought to book. This is the only way we must fight corruption, when we have coordinated activities among ourselves, especially in terms of mutual monitoring of the activities and of the individuals. So if we understood, as we come to the end of the program, if we understood that public office is not a private office, please understand that. And it is not wrong for a second person to know what you are doing in the public office. Promote that culture of transparency and accountability. Yeah, I am just going away to see somebody in hospital quickly. I may be late for 2 minutes. Somebody must know what you are doing. Okay, don't just disappear and then you expect to be paid at the end of the month, even for the hours and minutes that you are absent. So with that word, I would like to call it a day. Unless, Mr. Dennis, you have a word in a few seconds. Otherwise, we'll close the program. So thank you very much for listening to us. We will see you next week, same time and same station, Eagle FM. The program is always brought to you by the sponsorship of Konrad Adenauer Foundation. Thank you very much.